If you go out for a walk on a crisp fall or winter night, you might hear the sound of an owl. If you use the right strategy, you might even see one. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease will be here today. We're going to talk about the owls of Iowa. The great horned owl, the barred owl, and the screech owl are the ones you're most likely to hear. We'll find out about these fascinating birds and the other owls that we don't see or hear as often. We'll also talk about how you can identify owls by their calls and what kind of habitat might lure owls to your property. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're going to talk about the owls of Iowa, and wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me. Hello, Jim. Nicely done.
Good morning.
Good morning. I think we should probably speak English.
Oh, okay.
For much of the hour.
Instead of owl?
Right. For most of the time.
I'm feeling a little owly this morning. We could go on with lots of puns about
this. I'm sure you could. You have a special gift in that department. But how many different kinds of owls live in Iowa?
Well, there are, in North America, there are about 19 species, and we get 9 or 10, depending on how you count them, and in the state of Iowa at various times of the year. In terms of actually living here, as you said in your introduction, there are basically three kinds that are most common here: the great horned, the barred, B-A-R-R-E-D, and the eastern screech owl. But there are a number of others that we see occasionally.
Well, let's talk about some of the common ones. Let's start there. And, you know, we have this ongoing story on Talk of Iowa. Every time we talk about a wild animal in Iowa, we seem to have the same backstory, which is that it pretty much disappeared from the state, and now it's come back. How about with owls?
Owls have sort of been consistently here, although two species in particular, the great horned and bards, are becoming more common as they moved into cities. They used to be, a critter of the countryside, and as the countryside has changed, owls have been, those two species at least, have been much more adaptable than many other species have been, and have moved into cities and towns. It's not at all uncommon to hear barred owls or great horned owls in within city limits of very large cities: Des Moines, Iowa City, Ames. We see them in lots of towns and cities, and part of that is due to the availability of prey. As we've moved from mixed farmland, in which you have livestock and stored grain and small grains and everything, where you had lots more small rodents out there, and we've improved storage capabilities with grain in particular, we've gotten to a point where the owls had to say, well, gee, there's not as much prey here now. What do I do? Where do I go? And they moved into cities where there are, because of leash laws, where we were not allowed in most cities and towns around the state to allow dogs and cats to run freely, legally. And we have lots more rabbits, lots more ground squirrels, chipmunks, that sort of thing, that are prey for these owls.
So there's plenty of prey, but what about habitat?
Yeah, habitat is one of those things that for owls, it has to do with the prey. Certainly, in terms of nesting, they've got to have a place to nest. But if you look at great horned owls, for example, they're not really very picky. They'll take over, a hawk's nest from the previous summer, occasionally even a squirrel's nest. If the top of a tree kind of got blown out by a lightning strike or something, that's good enough. They're not particularly good housekeepers. They don't do a lot of building of the nest. They'd rather take over somebody else's. And so in terms of shelter, you know, there are enough mature trees in most towns and cities that they do pretty well. And then if the prey is there, they can make a living fairly well.
Well, let's talk about the great horned owl, because I think that that is almost the iconic owl. When people think of an owl, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it has those ear tufts that people call ears, and they're not ears at all. Their ears are actually hidden kind of behind that facial disc on the sides of their head, just as ours are. The difference in the ears, though, is that they are they're offset, and we'll come back to that in a few minutes. But they're this about close to 2 feet long. If you add in the ear tufts, they might be a little bit more than that. And from the top of their head to the base of their tail, and they weigh about 3 pounds is all. Even though they look like they weigh a lot more,
and they're a big, imposing looking
yes,
bird. Even though
are.
There's not that much under those feathers,
right? Right, and they have bright yellow eyes with black centers, and we see that that large bill and those big facial disc, those special feathers around the eyes.
I think they just look terminally grumpy.
You think they have an attitude, huh?
They look like they do.
Yeah, and perhaps they do. In many ways, they certainly are the tiger of our woodlands, including our wooded environments within towns and cities, because they're pretty fierce. They can eat anything up to and including things, rabbits, possums, cats that are allowed to run around. And skunks, believe it or not, they eat skunks. They don't have much of a sense of smell, and so skunk spray, which is intent on causing great harm to the olfactory area of any potential predator. Owls could care less. It's sort of like a perfume, maybe. They could care less. I helped band great horned owls when I was up in northern Alberta, and we caught one time that was had very recently visited skunk heaven. And so I never thought I could band anything quite that quickly, but I did.
So let's talk about their hunting and how they do it, because you mentioned the ears already, so I think that's a great place to start.
Right. The ears on owls are incredible. They are, if you think about hunting as an owl versus hunting as a human, humans hunt on the ground for the most part, so you have to be able to hear basically in a horizontal plane. But owls have to also be able to navigate in the vertical plane as well, because they're up and down and be able to triangulate to get in on the prey. In order to do that, and they can hunt in nearly complete darkness, and they do that with their ears. Their ears are offset on the sides of their head. One is higher than the other on the side, and there are different sizes of openings as well. So what they effectively do, because they're hearing not only from different angles on each side of the head, but different angles up and down on the head, they can navigate in this vertical plane as well as a horizontal plane. Also, those facial discs, which are really, really important. And if you look at a picture of an owl, you'll see these. It looks like the eyes are much, much larger because they have these special feathers that all sort of point into the eye. Well, those feathers are particularly good at funneling two things. It's like putting your hand up next to your ear. You know, you funnel in more sound. And that's exactly what those facial discs do. They funnel in both sound and light, so they can hunt in extremely low light, and they can triangulate with their ears. Their eyes are also important to them. In most cases, there's some light.
And they seem very large for their bodies.
Yeah, they are. If we were to compare them to our eyeballs, they'd be the size of softballs. You know, so if you hold up two softballs to your eye sockets, obviously they wouldn't fit in there very well, and obviously they wouldn't move around very well. So owls' eyes are fixed in their head in one direction. They can't move from side to side like ours do. They depend on the rotation of their head to do that. And they gather in light very effectively because they have many, many more rods in the back of their eyes than they have cones. Rods detect black and white, basically light and darkness, versus cones, which are primarily for color. If you're hunting at night, color doesn't matter very much. What you want is the difference between the light areas and the dark areas. And so they have those two things in particular that allow them to hunt very, very effectively. A big, large disc around each eye, which gathers in light, and ears that that are offset and also aided by those discs which gather in sound.
Well, and you mentioned the rotation of their head, and we often talk about owls being able to turn their heads all the way around, under which they don't exactly do,
no.
But underneath all those feathers, what do their necks look like?
Well, they're short-necked. Obviously, they sort of look like linebackers, football linebackers, because they look like they have very large very, very, very large shoulders and no neck. But basically, they're able to rotate around 270 degrees. And that allows them then, instead of moving their eyes from side to side, their head turns 270 degrees around from the front. So you can look in all directions and still gather in both light and sound in all those directions.
And we know how they find their prey now, but what makes it possible for them to approach their prey without their prey knowing about them?
Yes. You ask such good questions. This is what it always helps to have someone who knows something about owls like Charity does. You've probably raised some, as a matter of fact.
I have.
Right. Well, they have their feathers are different. The feathers on owls, not only the ones around the eyes are in particularly specialized feathers, but actually the feathers all over the surface of owls is different than most other birds. If you looked at a feather really, really closely, under a magnifying glass or a binocular, a dissecting microscope, you'd see that actually feathers are made up of long hairs that have little hooks and barbs on each hair. And those hooks and barbs go together. They zip up, if you will, all the way to the edge. It's what allows a bird to fly and to have resistance against the wind in order to get off the ground. On owls, those zippers don't zip all the way to the ends of the feathers. So the edges of the feathers are sort of ragged, and that includes the feathers all over their body, but especially on their wings. On the leading edge of their wings, they have these, it's almost like a comb, in fact. They don't come together at all. And what that does is it breaks up the air currents. So instead of whoosh, 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 like you hear on many birds' wings, you hear
nothing.
Exactly. You hear nothing because it breaks up those air currents and they're not allowed to, it doesn't make any sound then as they fly.
Well, in a moment, we will talk about the sounds that they do make. I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're talking about the owls of Iowa. We're starting off with the great horned owl this hour. And, of course, you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions or your owl stories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and we're talking about the owls of Iowa. We're going to focus on the most common owls here in the beginning part of the hour, and we'll talk about some of the others in a few minutes as well. We'd love for you to join our conversation. You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's talk about sounds, Jim, because we talked about how they fly silently, which can be a remarkable experience if a great horned owl with their incredible wingspan swoops near you at night. It's really stunning.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, we're talking about a wingspan that's almost 4 feet wide, and yet they fly absolutely silently. And again, it's the way the feathers are structured that allows them to fly so silently. They don't have hard surfaces against the wind that or against the air that is causing one of the things that causes sound, of course. So they have these all these feathers that break them up, including feathers that go all the way down their feet to the very edge tips of their toenails or their talons. You might say these birds are very talented birds.
They have impressive talons.
Yes, they do. And so they fly very, very quietly. And I many times have been out on night walks with kids and adults and families and all kinds of folks and calling in owls, and we won't have any luck until all of a sudden we realize there's one in the tree right above us. And they'll respond with a, ooh, kind of right above you. And it's like, whoa, how did he get there? And that's always an exciting experience. You realize that they came in very, very quietly and landed in the tree above you. So it's pretty remarkable.
And what is their call? What is the great horned owl call, Jim?
Great horned owl call is a very deep, it's what a lot of people, although a lot of people refer to hoot owls, there's no such thing as a hoot owl, they do have a hoot, and different owls have different patterns, of course, to do different species recognition. And great horned owls sounds a little bit like this. It goes, ooh, 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 ooh. Sort of, I'm a great horned owl, aren't you? So there, it's very deep and has a strong resonance over a great deal of area. Now they have lots of other sort of barks and that, and in fact the young are just hilarious because as they get to be teenagers in the latter parts of the summer, you'd think they'd be on their own. But the parents are still feeding them, and they have this sort of almost a bark saying, "Mom, Dad, feed me." You know.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a parrot call.
It does.
Well, I'll give that one a try. It's more like a. Rah!
Yeah, exactly. That's good. That's
Thanks.
Really
I've practiced.
and it goes on, and you think, "Good gosh!"
And they
get out
won't
on your own,
stop.
You know?
And you know, I've heard them a lot at night, but they sound similar to a lot of the things that make noises on summer nights. You know,
right.
You can get them mixed up with the cicadas or the katydids. I'm forgetting which ones call at night.
Right.
And and raccoon babies, which also make a lot of noise at
right.
night. They're all in that sort of "I need you right now"
right
kind
now.
Of
feed
pitch.
Me, feed me.
Right. They make another sound, and Jim, I don't know if you've ever heard this one from the baby owls, because having been a wildlife rehabilitator, I have raised great horned owls,
right.
And the very first one that we raised was an only great horned owl, and so although we made sure that he was not imprinted on humans using puppets and mirrors.
Oh, good.
I spent a lot of time with him. I was 14 years old, and he was very fond of me, and he liked me to put my hands around him and sort of give him a hug with my hands.
Wow.
And when I would do that, he would go tweet 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 tweet. and he would do that. He became a very, very big bird.
I'll
and he would come and he would land on my arm, or he'd land on the fence next to me, and I would do that, and he would still, although he was big and he had his ear tufts and he had his stern
he'd
look on his face,
that.
He'd still go tweet 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 tweet.
You know, it's interesting because if you watch during the summertime, if you feed birds at all during the summer, and you watch the fledglings learn to come to the feeders with their parents, they'll do this wing fluttering and do a different call just like that, even though they're adult-sized and adult feathers and even adult colors in some species, they still behave like little ones and do this sort of, I guess, a visual tweeting like that as well. That's really interesting.
So let's talk about babies. How many eggs do great horned owls lay?
You know, this is a really interesting part of it because they respond to the food availability around them rather quickly. I did research up in northern Alberta, and one of our research group was working on owls, and their primary prey were the snowshoe hare in the boreal forest of Canada, and some years they would have three or even four young, at least in the beginning, at the beginning of the breeding season, they would lay up to four eggs, and some years they'd lay none. And it all depended on their condition coming into the breeding season. Now, great horned owls are some of the earliest nesters. It's not unusual in Iowa to have a great horned owl beginning laying their eggs in January, in the depth of winter in Iowa, they're already laying eggs and incubating them. So it is it's amazing when you think about that. So they respond based on their condition. The numbers of eggs they lay. So it's sort of this self-limiting population in a way. So if there's lots of prey around, they're coming into the breeding season in very good condition, they'll lay three or four eggs. The owl that is most responsive, the species of owl that's most responsive, is the barn owl, B-A-R-N, very uncommon in Iowa to this day. And they can respond very quickly. If there's a big peak in mouse population around them, they will, you know, lay many eggs, half a dozen, 8, 10 even sometimes, and respond very, very quickly. But great horned owls, it takes a little bit longer to respond, but they still do respond to the availability of prey, and it depends on their condition.
And the mother and the father are both involved in raising the
yes,
babies?
Yeah, both involved in raising, both involved in incubation and involved in raising the young, finding food for the young throughout the following growing season. So, yeah, they're both involved and seem to be very involved with the young. And great horns are one of those that we say are lifelong mates. However, As we've gotten into genetics a lot more and DNA, we've been able to track this a little more. And there's a little more messing around out there in the owl world than we thought there was. Perhaps.
Not unlike the human world,
correct,
probably.
Correct.
All right. And there is a period in time in the spring when people seem to see a lot of young owls. And that's when they're branchers, right?
Right. Yeah. Branchers refers to the fact that they come out of the nest area, however that nest might be, whether it's an abandoned crow nest or an abandoned or an unused red-tailed hawk nest, or simply the top of a broken top of a tree, the young, when they get to a certain point, they want to try out their wings, and the nest is a little confining, so they get out on the edges of the nest and out onto the branches, and sometimes fall off, not being able to fly yet. So sometimes they'll be down on the ground. And people are often, because they're up there kind of exercising their wings, young humans, they do things that, instead of hiding during the day, they might be out there stretching their wings and people will see them more readily.
And of course, when you see them, that doesn't mean that they are desperately in need of your help.
No. That's for sure. And it's like most baby wildlife, you're seeing them for a reason that you don't necessarily understand. Their ideas of parenting are very different than ours are.
Well, I think we should talk about some of the other owls, barred owl next, but we have a lot of people also who want to get in on this conversation.
Okay, good.
I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're talking about the owls of Iowa, and you can join us at 866-780-9100. And JD in Iowa City is going to jump us away from the topic of barred owls, but I'm sure you saw this one coming. Hi, JD.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
So last winter, I was driving home from work, and I live downtown in Iowa City by the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked over, and I slowed down because I saw something that looked like a white hefty bag, and it was actually an owl like the ones on the Harry Potter movies.
Right. Yeah. You saw what lots of Iowans and actually lots of Midwesterners as far south as Oklahoma, which is very, very weird, saw last year. What we had was what was called an invasion year of snowy owls. Snowy owls, an owl that nests in the Arctic. And in the Arctic, of course, trees at most are about 6 inches high, so they're basically not accustomed to these big things down here that are 30, 40, 50 feet high. And so we frequently see them on the ground when they come down here. They come down here in response to a lack of food in the Arctic. Because the food webs in the Arctic are so simple, when one species collapses, in this case the lemmings or the voles, when you don't have many of those around, and there are lots of reasons why those populations cycle up and down so fast. The owls that feed on those, depend on those small rodents, will head south because there's not enough for them to eat. And this last year, we had an incredible invasion of particularly of young snowy owls coming south. They came into Iowa. We had over 150 some sightings in Iowa, often in very unusual places like the one you describe, JD. And they were sighted even farther south than they usually are in invasion years. And as I said, clear down into Oklahoma, which is very unusual.
Invasion makes it sound so horrible, and it was so cool.
Right. Yeah, it was very, very
an
cool.
An awesome invasion.
Right, right.
Oh, JD, thanks a lot for your call. And Michael is on the line from Harper. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
First of all, Charity, I enjoy your show because you seem to have a knowledge about everything.
Well, she
maybe,
does.
Maybe you study, but
I
you're
do
very
study.
Good.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. What would you like to talk about?
And then Jim, I think you should be a teacher. You're so good at explaining everything. Yeah.
Thank you.
I have chickens here, and at night I have them.
Yeah. Yeah.
What owl is that?
That is the next one we're going to talk about. That's the barred owl.
But that call goes on, doesn't it, Michael? There's a second part to that. Is there a second part to that call? Have you heard it?
No, it's just... And okay. I go out and I talk to them, and they'll answer real fast.
Good.
If you talk to them.
Yeah.
Anyway, I lose a chicken once in a while, and I trapped all my coon, and I trapped all the cats, and I trapped all the possums, so I know it's the owl that's doing
probably,
taking my chicken.
Right. Yeah, probably taking the occasional chicken that doesn't get into the hen house at night. And it sounds like what you're hearing is the barred owl, B-A-R-R-E-D, because of the barring on the vertical barring on their chest and belly. And they say their voice, sometimes when you take bird songs and convert them to human words, it's easier to remember them. And so we say, the barred owl says, "Who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all?" And if you don't hear that second part, that's because they have a variety of calls. That's quite possible. But it may be that you're also hearing a portion of the great horned owl one, and they're more likely to take chickens because they're
right.
a larger owl.
They're bigger.
It's a much deeper sound than the barred owl is generally.
Well, and Jim, I remember the first time I ever saw a barred owl when I was a kid, and it was at the same time when everyone was talking about the spotted owl in the Pacific Northwest, and I saw the barred owl, and I thought, we don't have spotted owls here.
Right.
And we don't, of course, but barred right. owls look very much like spotted owls. Right?
Right, and they're the same genus, as a matter of fact. So they're very closely related, and in fact, they interbreed where their ranges overlap, and it's one of the big problems now from an endangered species standpoint in the Northwest, because it appears that the barred owl is invading into spotted owl habitat and taking over even the spotted owl habitat that is was supposedly safe for spotted owls. Barred owls are saying, "Hey, thanks very much." You know,
well, and the barred owl, unlike the spotted owl, has done extremely well.
Yes, it has. It has not only done range expansion, but the numbers have expanded as well. They're primarily a rodent eater and do eat things up to and including the size of rabbits, but more likely small rodents that are quite a bit smaller than that, and they do very, very well on mice and voles and occasional ground squirrel, that sort of thing. The barred owl, in fact, has the most varied diet, and they're a little bit more of a generalist. They'll even eat things in the water. If you find barred owl pellets, they often will contain crayfish exoskeletons, sometimes fish scales. So it's not unusual for them to be seen in and around water and even feeding on things much earlier in the evening than other owls are seen. You'll often hear barred owls calling in late afternoon, early evening, and actually can see them then as well.
And let's, of course, barred owls, they're built similar to the great horned owls. All owls are built pretty much the same. They don't have the ear tufts.
Right, yeah, they don't have the ear tufts. And that's the thing that that Michael should probably look for if he can find a silhouette of this owl that's around his property. Look for the ear tufts. And if you don't see the ear tufts, the chances are pretty good that it's a barred owl instead of a great horned. They're a little bit smaller, shorter than the barred. They're more like 18 to 20 inches in size. They're very rounded head and have the all their eyes are very different than great horns. Great horns have those yellow eyes with dark centers. These guys have all dark blue or dark brown eyes. The whole eye is very, very different. It's typical of this genus. Their eyes are not pigmented in the same way that other owls are.
We didn't talk about the eyelids of the great horned owls. I've gotten to see the eyelids of barred owls. They have kind of a complicated eyelid structure.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I think we identify with owls so readily, and the reason they were so popular on Harry Potter and other on nature shows, is this sort of blinking that they do. They have a nictitating membrane which helps protect the actual eyeball, particularly when they're going after prey, which is a membrane that goes across the eyeball. But it's that blinking that looks so human, I think, that we identify with them.
Right. They look like they're communicating with us.
Yes, that's right.
I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're talking about the owls of Iowa. We'll continue our conversation, talk a little bit more about the barred owl and the screech owl and some of the other owls in the state in a moment. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me today is wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and we are talking about the owls of Iowa. You are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You're welcome to call with your questions or with your owl stories as well. And Jim, before we get to the little screech owls, how long do these big owls, the barred owls and the great horned owls, live?
That's a great question. And from banding data, we know that they're fairly long-lived compared to songbirds, for example. 10 years is a long-lived owl, but not unusual at all, 10, 12 years. Often shorter than that, though. It's like anything, in order that first year from the time they're teenagers until adulthood is the most difficult time because they have to begin hunting on their own. They have to find their own prey. And so the majority of owls don't make it to age one. But those that do then have to find territory. And often owls will be in the same territory year after year after year, using the same structures or whatever in order to nest and using the same prey in that area. And while they may vary a little bit within an area if they have the option to, basically they're pretty territorial. In fact, those hoots those calls that they give are, in fact, they serve two functions. One is a territorial signal, and the other then is a signal that says, "Hey, here I am. Where are you?" And they're talking to their mates, and so they're fairly long lived for predatory birds, but they have to make it to adulthood first, and that's sometimes very difficult for them.
A challenge for a lot of wild critters.
Right, right.
Let's talk about screech owls. They are much, much smaller.
Yeah, you're talking, the barred owl was a pound and a half, a foot and a half high, up to 20 inches. The screech owl is a 6-inch high owl. It does have ear tufts, even though they're not associated with ears. It has those tufts on the top of their heads,
so which again makes them look fierce. But they're little.
Yeah. and they come in various color phases, from gray to red to some things that are in between. And they weigh about a third of a pound, is all, you know, six or 7 ounces. So we're really, really, this is a diminutive little guy. And they're very strictly hole nesters, whereas the barred owl will prefer to live in holes, to nest in holes. There, if they've got the broken treetop that kind of bends over, that's okay. They'll use that as well. Screech owls are very much dependent on cavities that they can nest in. And a lot of people in recent years have put up homes, you know, artificial holes for them, you know, houses for them. And that's good, but there are other things that there are over 60 species of Iowa wildlife that one way or the other need standing or downed dead trees with holes in them in order to find food and shelter. And screech owls are one of those that that needs a cavity to nest in. So there's a lot of competition sometimes for those cavities. Squirrels will often take them over if you put up a screech owl house, or sometimes if it's in the wrong area, maybe a kestrel, which is a hawk, will take over, a little falcon, will take over those same houses. So they're competitive with other critters for these cavities.
And what do the screech owls eat? I mean, these are all strictly carnivorous birds.
Yes.
They all eat meat, but the screech owl certainly can't take down a bunny.
No. they're very much restricted to small mammals and occasional small birds, but mostly small mammals. Mice in particular is a great deal for a screech owl. They also eat some insects as well, particularly big insects that they would find at night, everything from cicadas to katydids and other night large insects that they can find at night.
You mentioned earlier the sawit owl. You almost mentioned the sawit owl. But before we get to the sawit, we should talk about what screech owls sound like, because a lot of us have heard them too.
Right. And we may not have realized that we heard them, because they have two calls. They have sort of a whinny, it's sort of descending whinny. It goes... And then they have a tremolo, and let me see if I can still do this. Not quite. I can't quite do it.
You're getting close. We have a recording. Should we play the recording here? We'll see if this is the tremolo, though. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was the whinny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, and I don't think we have the tremolo.
It's a solid, you have to whistle through spit is what you have to do. That's what I'm trying to do here in the studio.
Theoretically, what they're doing.
That's right. And it's a solid note, and it's a single note, and it warbles. That's the best way to describe it, I guess, is a warbling whistle. I'm coming close. But
right, I think we're getting the idea. Right. We have this wonderful comment. This is from one of my coworkers, Andrew Argenbright, in our membership department. He says, I have a brother who uses his iPad every evening to call a screech owl, who then actually comes and lights on the back of a chair on his porch.
Oh, my gosh.
All his brother did was Google screech owl calls, and then he plays them off of his iPad.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And it really is. You can get different applications on your iPad. My wife has the... one of the books, the Sibley Guide to Birds, on her, and they do play wonderful recordings of owls and other birds, so you can hear those. It's a real advantage that technology has given us. And so if you can't imitate them, although I've spent years practicing it in the shower,
we don't want to make your skill set obsolete, Jim.
Oh, I'm sure it is obsolete by now. but you can call them in, and in fact, I've called in screech owls. We heard them as we were going to bed one night some years ago, and I called them in. They were right out the the male in particular was right outside the window, and he was calling back. And we just finally went to bed. And after a while, my wife kind of punched me and woke me up and said, "Would you make him go away?" I don't know what you said, but he really likes you. So he was still out there calling several hours later. In fact.
Well, it's so interesting because you talked about how they're territorial birds. They're right. calling to their mates, but they must be social as well.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of socialness that because when I've been out with groups, for example, on a night walk and doing calling in barred owls in particular, I'll get up to three or four, and one night I had five owls all coming in. And then they change their call. And this is a call that some people call the monkey call, and it's a replacement. It's sort of they do this whole head bobbing routine when they're doing it, and they're sort of looking at each other and bopping their heads up and down. It goes, and their heads are going up and down, and they're looking at each other, and it's sort of a replacement for aggression. But you kind of wonder if they're not laughing as well in some way.
And if only we could understand them.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Well, you mentioned the saw-whit owl. So before we get to some more calls, the saw-whit owl does live in Iowa. And when we think of the screech owl as being small, the saw-whit goes further, right?
Yeah, they're about the same size, but they're just this tiny little bugger. They're so small. They're less than 3 ounces in weight. So while lengthwise they're about the same, they're mainly feather, and there's not much to them.
And when you hear saw-whit, they're named for their sound.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very metallic note that kind of goes. But it's more metallic than that. I can't even almost the saw-whit. It's the sharpening of a saw, and that's the metallic portion of the sound. It sounds, in fact, if you're not used to hearing it, it sounds very mechanical, and you don't think it comes from an animal at all. It's very, very, and very regular. And as with all owls, there are variations in different parts of the country. That's why when you get on the internet and you call up some of these calls, you'll see, well, one is from New York and one is from Texas and another is from California, and they sound a bit different. There are dialects in these calls, regional dialects, just as there are in the English language here. So it's quite fascinating to see how they vary from area to area.
Let's get to the phones now, and you are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Harry's on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Harry.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your story?
All right. We were vacationing in rural Washington several years ago and stopped at a small tavern in a very small town that was entirely dependent on the lumbering industry.
Mm-hmm.
And when the spotted owl became an endangered species, it had just decimated the industry. Over the bar, they had a huge sign that said, "Try our delicious spotted owl stew."
Right. Right, yeah. Yeah, I know that that's been I just attended a talk a week ago on spotted owls and northwestern forest management that has resulted from that. And there are a lot of jokes about endangered species, particularly if they cost people jobs, right?
Let's go to Randy on the line in Iowa County next. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. Two questions. The first one is the barn owl still on the decline? And did you hear anything recently about a bunch of deer being found dead over by Rock Creek? Due to something in the water killed over 150 deer. They weren't very far from the water source.
Yeah, that probably was EHD, also called blue tongue. It's been particularly prevalent. We talked about this in our
right.
program.
Epizootic hemorrhagic
disease, right?
Right.
Yeah, and they often die near water because they're essentially bleeding to death internally and very thirsty.
And if you want to know more about that, you can listen back to we talked about that extensively last month.
Right,
I believe.
Right, last month. And what was the other question?
Barn owls.
Barn owls. Yeah, barn owls. Barn owls. are a native owl to Iowa. They are probably the most have the widest range of any species of owl. It goes clear into Central and South America. There are some what some people consider subspecies of them, but again, it's a very, very wide-ranging owl. And here, they are not doing well. In part, it's because of the change in I think largely due to change in land use and change in agricultural patterns. They've not done well here. The lack of available habitat for them. There's not as many of their prey, particularly small rodents, around. There are not as many barns around that they used to use to nest in. But they will nest in caves and in hollow trees and places like that. So, yes, they're still not doing well at all in Iowa. There have been lots of attempts to try to provide them nesting habitat with varying degrees of success. One of their major predators is the great horned owl. Remember I said that the great horned owl was the tiger of the woodlands, and they will eat all kinds of things, including other owls. And this is why, for most cases, barn owls are prey for great horns, and great horns are doing very well. They're much more generalist species than the more narrowly defined barn owl is.
Well, earlier you mentioned screech owl boxes. We've talked a lot about the different kinds of habitat that the owls like. If you want owls to live on your property, is there anything you can do to attract them besides calling them like Jim Pease?
Yeah, you can certainly providing all of these are related primarily to woodlands. There are we can talk about those in a second here. There are some prairie species, but primarily these are woodland species. Leaving standing dead trees where it's safe to do so, particularly trees that have cavities in them. You can provide certainly artificial nest cavities of various sizes, and there are lots of things available, plans available on the web for constructing those. But mostly providing any kind of habitat that is good mixed habitat. Woodland provides lots of rodents for them to eat. Rabbits by providing brush piles so that the rabbits survive. You're going to have owls around if you have decent habitat for them.
All right. And you have talked about going on owl walks with students. If you want to see owls, what do you do?
Well, one of the best things, talk to your county conservation boards. Lots of county conservation boards have naturalists that will provide family-oriented, particularly this time of year, close to Halloween. We'll have family-oriented night walks where they'll teach you and about owls and call owls in. And together with your kids, it's a great opportunity to get out there in the evening and take a walk and see what else is around at night.
And there's a wonderful book I just have to recommend, and I'm sure you've seen it as well. It's a classic. It's been around for a long time, but it's called Owl Moon.
Owl Moon,
by
yes.
Jane Yoder. And that
you bet.
Will give you some wonderful ideas for how to go out and find owls yourself with your kids.
You bet.
It doesn't have to be that cold, right? It's a very cold night when they go out.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be at all. Certainly, I've been out many, many times with groups. In fact, I was out just a couple of weeks ago with a group of university students, and we were calling owls, so you bet.
Right, and if you don't want to work that hard, you could also go to the McBride Raptor Center near Iowa City.
Eastern Iowa, and
there are other places to see them as well. Right. Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And I'll let you go with this note. We had an email from Nancy who says that their basset hound was wildly entertained by you this hour.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
You are moving the dogs of Iowa. Jim Pease, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease, he will be back again next month for dogs and people. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. Owl sounds provided almost entirely by Jim Pease. Jason Burns lent technical support in Ames today. Our theme music is composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.